Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. I'm Lisa Anderson, and let me give you a little taste of what is coming up later in the show. We have got our inbox with Joshua Rogers. You know he loves to share his opinion on things, but it's great because he often has great practical advice. And this week he is going to advise a guy who is not interested in a girl. And he's kind of a little nervous about just being blunt about it, but should he be? Well, we'll see what Joshua has to say. Then for our culture segment, Dan Dumas is back. He is a professor as well as an author, a pastor, and has written the book Live Smart with just some great principles for really for growing in your Christian faith and into adulthood as well. Okay, so this is going to be an interesting roundtable. We have got Andrew, Brandon, and Ashley back. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi.
And this is primarily because we're going to talk about ego. So you guys naturally came to mind. And it was like, you know, who really could weigh in on this? Oh, yeah, those three.
Lots of experience.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it's not like... It's funny because I think when we talk about ego nowadays, you just tend to talk about, like, jock types or people that are just braggadocious about themselves or so-and-so is egotistical. Mm-hmm. But I think it's actually, you know, there are a lot of spiritual principles that I think play into ways that we can evidence ego or whatever we want to call it. I mean, you know, pride, self, my wants, my needs, my feelings, hat tip to Paul Tripp, all of that as far as, you know, putting ourselves before others and making more of ourselves than we should. And so I want to just kind of dive into that a little bit today. There was actually an article on Hello Christian that talked about ego really restricting you even from God's plan and God's will for your life. And kind of that idea of like when we get in our own way, or our own sin and pride does that. And so this is kind of a loaded question, but I'm going to put it out there anyway. And that is, like, what do you guys think of? I mean, do you think of yourselves when you think of the word ego? I mean, I don't. I think of myself as very self-effacing, very whatever. So I would like to think of myself as not, quote, that prideful person. I mean, I know other people that certainly are. I don't put myself in that category, but I don't know. Is this one of those things that you had to think about, or are you just like, oh, yeah, this is a big struggle for me?
Definitely a struggle for me. I feel like...
What? I know. Do not even strike me. You're just so sweet, Ashley.
Oh,
whatever.
Yeah, stop.
Prove it to us. Prove it to us.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like that's one of the things that I've struggled with most of my life, especially growing up. My dad was a pastor and, you know, people just look at you and expect you to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's just really easy to get this feeling of... I'm, in a sense, better than some of these other people, which I hate saying those words, but sometimes you just have that feeling. And yeah, that's something I feel like I've always kind of struggled with, and especially it manifests itself in being a people pleaser, and wanting people to like me and wanting to be popular. And a lot of it is rooted in pride and in wanting to have my own kingdom, I guess. So I think it's definitely something that kind of resonates with me, at least.
Yeah. Here's where that worked well for me, because my dad was a pastor, but he quit the pastorate before I was born. So by the time I came around, I could just do whatever. All my siblings had to live under that cloud. So it was good. I was just freewheeling it. But good. What about you, Brandon?
I never really thought about it until I actually read this article. I wouldn't have really walked around thinking, oh, I have a really, you know, I'm egotistical or I have a problem with it. But as I looked at some of these examples, it's like, oh, wow.
You're like,
I actually am, you know, and
it's
not maybe externally projected as much as it's internal, you know, especially like as we start talking through some of these things, you know, the change, that's probably one that really kind of hit me in the gut was that it, you know, ego does not like change. And I do not like change.
Yeah.
So therefore... You know, it is a form of ego. But.
Yeah, I think it's something I've wrestled with my entire life. And I feel like in my life, especially those points where the Lord has blessed me with opportunity or ability, those are places where ego really shows up, where I tend to compare myself with others and compare myself favorably compared to others. It's just something that you just see kind of crop up, especially where, you know, you might... like lose at something that you shouldn't have lost at, or maybe you get passed over and somebody else is picked in front of you. Those are the times where you kind of feel this, wait, what? Why would you pick that person over me? Or, and you kind of, I kind of feel that like kind of swirling where it's like, okay, like time to humble yourself and remember that you're not as great as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. No, it's good. Well, let's back it up because Brandon did allude to the first point that the article makes, and that's that the ego hates change above all else. I thought this was interesting. When your ego's in charge, you love comfort and the status quo, which I guess would mean, you know, it kind of plays into that idea of control and what you know and what you know you can accomplish or work within the parameters of and stuff. I thought it was very interesting that one of the examples here, you know, Jesus giving the sermon and saying, basically making the command repent, which is an ultimate example of change. So a heart change, a complete 180 in that sense. But why, Brandon, we'll start with you since that one hit you. Why is change so difficult for you? What do you think? And why does it play into ego? Why did this one resonate?
I think, like you said, it's like a control issue. You know, there's good change and there's change that's just more environmental. So, you know, like a routine. I'm very routine based. And so I think it almost, if I take a step back and look at it, it's like anything that rocks the boat for me, you know, it becomes all about me. It's like, you know, being kind of the whole introverted type of thing. You're making it about you when you can't kind of adapt to that change. And that shows that there is an ego there. There's healthy change, obviously. I mean, you know, wanting to hit a goal or to do something to better yourself, that's one change. But I think I just look at it as the day-to-day, like, oh, you know, now I have to do this, or, you know, I like doing it this way. But now, you know, change management, the kind of the area that I work in, you know, in the ministry, we deal a lot with that, just with things changing and having to kind of walk people through that. And it's funny that I do that, yet at the same time, I can be resistant and not like change as well, because it becomes inconvenient for me, essentially.
Yeah, that's true. You know, well, maybe it helps when you're working with other people's change, and then it's you can leave it at the end of the day.
That
all of a sudden,
true.
When it's your project, and it's like, what? What do I have to change? Anyone else have change issues? Not like you're getting ready to move.
Yeah. The change of moving, I think that, like, I think about it in terms of the change of growth. Mm-hmm. You think about any time you're going to learn something or you're going to grow in any way, you have to first come to a place where you see your need for growth. Mm-hmm. And I think that you know, that humbling and saying, you know what, I can't do this. I need something else in order to be able to do something that I want to do, and being able to take that risk, you're really risking, like, your own, you know, your own failure. Mm-hmm. Any growth, you really have to attempt things that you don't know how to do. You have to risk embarrassing yourself. You have to risk, like, all these things that are an attack to your ego. So I think the reason we don't like change is we're fearful of what if this doesn't work out. Mm-hmm. So we're getting ready to move to San Diego and you know, start a new job there. And I do think that the part of the fear is, what if this doesn't go well? Mm-hmm. Like, what if this job doesn't work out, or what if we don't find a place to live? All these fears that can creep in, and really those fears kind of grow out of this, man, I really want people to think that I make good decisions and I do good things and that I can handle anything that comes my way. Mm-hmm. And so I think ego really shows up where it's, you're really like, you don't want to do anything or take any risk that could open you up to being embarrassed.
Yeah.
And so the person who deals with ego and humbles himself is like, yeah, if I fail, that's okay. I'll learn from that failure. I mean, so many, when you start reading books on success, so many people have built success on failures. And there's so many illustrations of people that failed and failed and failed and failed and failed and then succeeded. And they look back and they're like, oh, all those failures were part of my success. Mm-hmm. And so ego can keep us from that. If you're afraid to fail at anything, then change will be hard and you might have an ego problem.
Yeah. You know what kind of change I love? Changing other people.
I thought you were going to say change at the store.
I like pocket change.
Yeah.
But I just think to myself, like, how many times I look at other people and I'm like, if only they weren't like that, then I wouldn't be like this. Like my reaction towards people, and like, I am reacting to them this way because they are such a jerk, or they are so dumb, or they are so, you know, and I'm always like, you know, why can't they just change, or why can't they grow, or what's their problem, or whatever? And so I think turning it back on myself is probably a good exercise in that. All right. I thought this one was good. Minimizing sins of the heart and focusing instead on sins of the flesh. Mm. This is a great example for, you know, those of you that mentioned the comparison trap as well, because what you can see is easy to judge and say, oh, yeah, well, at least I'm not like that. But all of a sudden, you know, you can run the mental list of, yeah, here was a time where I classic case of what I just shared, look down on someone or wish that they were different or wish that, you know, they weren't infringing on my rights or saying something that I didn't like or didn't agree with. I don't know. What'd you guys think? What'd you guys think about that one?
It reminded me of the parable in, I think it's Luke 18, where it talks about there's like two men praying at the temple, and one of them is a Pharisee and the other one's a tax collector. And the Pharisee says, like, thank you, God, that I'm like so righteous and I'm not as bad as this tax collector. And he says, like, you know, this really righteous and holy prayer. And then the tax collector is kind of off by himself in the corner and he just asks God to have mercy on him. And then the passage goes on to say, like, woe is the Pharisee, because he's proud, and like God will exalt the humble, basically. And it just kind of reminded me of that story, and that it's so easy sometimes to be just like the Pharisee and to think, oh, I'm so much better because I look like this on the outside and because I know all the right answers and I've studied at church. And it's easy to think you're so perfect. But then I was reading, like, in preparation for this, in Matthew 23, it says, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you clean the outside of the cup and plate, but are inside full of greed and self-indulgence. Hmm. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, you are like whitewashed tombs, which are outwardly appear beautiful, but inwardly are full of dead people's bones and uncleanliness. Which is like, whoa, that's so harsh. But I think a lot of us kind of, like, we care so much about what looks like on the outside and looking like we're so perfect when really our heart is dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I've definitely been there before. And so that's what I thought about.
Mm-hmm. Our culture celebrates that, sadly, though. I mean, we live in a time where it's like that, what you look like, you know, have it all together on the outside. That's what, as long as you can do that, then, you know, that's what success is. And it's hard to see. It's sad to see when people, you know, are just a wreck or a mess inside, but as long as they can project outwardly that they're fine, you know. And it is those sins of the heart that, I don't know, for some reason they just seem kind of easier to overlook or to kind of to bury, like, you know, back to that comparison thing. Well, at least it's not this, you know, I struggle with this thing, but at least it's not that. So, you know, it's not so bad, but it's one of those slippery slopes though, too. It's kind of the one of those things that if you don't get it under control, you don't identify it, it's going to come up and it can have a big impact. You know, it's kind of that rotting from the inside out. Like that tree that looks strong until you cut it open and it's not healthy.
Well, and here's a great example of this one. Let's move to the next one. The people that just constantly need praise or credit, like, they have to be recognized. They have to feel special. They have to, and they're reluctant to give that to other people. I mean, in this, I'm reminded of, before we started taping, we were talking about Beth Moore, because I do some of her studies. And but I remember her saying one time how she felt very convicted that even with the platform that she has, it's very important that she called it praying and pushing other teachers, leaders, whatever, forward. How can she shine the spotlight on them and a great thing that they're teaching or something that they're doing or something that she learned from someone else rather than making it about her? Because someone like her could easily get caught up in the spotlight or the number of Twitter followers or how many Bible studies she sold or whatever. And so it's one of those things of, I think for me, I have to be very conscious about that. I'm not just like, hey, let me just, you know, think everyone else is amazing and elevate them. I don't know. Do we feel like we're kind of praise hungry in a way?
Yeah, I think that that's a really good indicator, because it is a sign that your ego is out of control if you feel threatened by the success of others, especially when they're being successful at something that you want to see accomplished. I've recently been reading a book on Abraham Lincoln's leadership, and one of the big points they make in the book is that Lincoln was quick to praise others when things went well, but he would take the blame when his generals would mess up or when they would lose a battle. He would defer to himself and say, this was my fault, you know, here's how we can do better. But that if the battle went well, then he would give the generals praise publicly. And I just thought that just is like, really encapsulates his own humility, that he was secure enough in himself. And at the same time, he's undergoing a lot of criticism from people for being in the war and all this kind of stuff. Sorry, I won't make this a history lesson, but.
Who was Lincoln? Who are you talking about?
Abraham.
Oh yeah, okay.
On the penny and $5 bill. But so I think for me, like, I look at that and I'm like, in my own life, Like when other people on your team do something great and everybody kind of focuses on them, is there something inside of you that's like, hey, wait, I like made that happen, or I had a big part to play in that, and I, you know. So I think, especially as a leader, you have to be willing to defer credit to other people and want to see your team thrive, mm-hmm. and be willing to be the last to acknowledge when things go well. But then when things don't go well, you're willing to own that and say, you know what, guys, this is on me, and we're gonna make a change and do this better.
Hmm. All right. Well, there are a couple here that I want to kind of combine together in the interest of time. One of them is that ego seeks immediate gratification and despises anything hard or uncomfortable. I mean, this is like, who isn't this, is what I want to know. I don't know many people that are going after this. And then the last one being ego is overly sensitive and easily offended. And I think this is kind of a hallmark of where we are today, too. I mean, everything, you see people like screaming on social media. You see people leaving churches because someone put their nose out of joint for some reason or another. And just choosing not to do the hard thing. I mean, I feel like I am always gravitating towards comfort. I mean, I can't even tell you how many Groupons I want to buy for massages. I'm just all, I'm just like, my whole life is obsessed about like, can I buy this Groupon for this massage and can I fit it in? And I'm like, Lisa, you don't need to always be getting massages and sitting around and being comfortable, sitting in spas. Can't do it. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I like the phrase that ego seeks a quick fix. And I know that's true in my life. No one likes to have to struggle through something, but it's usually in the midst of that struggle is when you grow and when you're truly molded and defined and you learn. But it's having to, number one, think about having to do that, and number two, actually having to go through it. And so it kind of plays back up to number one, where ego hates change. I mean, anything that is hard or uncomfortable that you know is going to take effort to make work or make better it's not fun. And so your ego kind of tries to tell you that it's not worth the time or the effort to do it. You know, it's kind of, again, selfish and looking back towards yourself saying, you know, if it's hard for you, then you don't have to do it. You can just walk away and you lose out on a lot.
Yeah. I think of like, especially the last one, sensitive or easily offended. It's so easy to see every person in your life as like this mirror where you're constantly trying to see yourself. And they actually, psychologists say that in middle school, we do this. Like when we're trying to form our identity for the first time, we look to other people and we first gauge how do other people see us. And that's how we start to form our own identity. And I think that even into adulthood, we continue to do this. And it's so hard for us when somebody that's close to us or knows us well, you know, might say something or express something that kind of breaks us down a little bit, where it's like, oh, wow. And so I feel like we need to get back to a place where we allow close people in our lives to speak truth into our lives, even if it's painful. I think a lot of people don't want to give that hard word and don't want to receive it. And that's really how we're going to grow and have authentic relationships. Like, who in your life will tell you when you need to make a significant change in your life? And I tell you, there are so many people that would say, I would never do that for any of my friends, and I would never want any of my friends to do that for me. And it's sad, because you're never going to grow. You're never going to have anything pointed out to you if you're not willing to say, you know what, that was really hard to hear, but thank you. I needed to hear that.
It reminds me of, not too long ago, a group of friends just went on a simple Starbucks run, and totally, not only did they not ask me to go, but didn't even ask me if I wanted anything. And so when they come back, and I mean, it's like, hello, people, I'm like a grown woman, okay? I mean, but it was very easy to say, immediately go to, oh my goodness, is something wrong? Like, do they not like me? What, you know, and I'm like, or they just spaced it out, Lisa, and they just didn't, you weren't, you know, out of sight, out of mind, you weren't, but immediately we go to, now they hate me, they don't want me part of their friend group, they don't, and it's just like so drama fest, you know, but I could easily go there, even with, you know, oh, just preach truth to yourself, and God doesn't think that way of you, and no one, you know, whatever, and immediately we just go, you know, so.
Yeah.
But I'm going to point it out to him and make it feel bad, so. So they'll get me a free drink. I'm just saying. So, thanks, you guys.
Yeah, thank you.